My name is Dorothy, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you all for coming this afternoon. I know we're going to have a great workshop, and I know you're in for a great treat. Yes. Yes, I'm going to ask them to do that. Before we begin, this is the special needs section over here, and if we have someone that needs special that has special needs and needs signing, we would like them to come up here. We have the signers over here. So is there anyone that needs to be over here? We need two seats. If someone would give up two seats, please. Thank you. I'd like to ask for a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years. There will be about 15 to 20 minutes at the end of the meeting for sharing from the floor. This afternoon we have three speakers that are going to share their experience, strength, and hope. We have Hazel from Sarasota, Florida. We have Matt from Quincy, Massachusetts. And Patrick from Houston, Texas. We're going to begin this afternoon with the lady, and so we're going to ask Hazel to be first.
Hi, everybody. I'm Hazel, and I'm an alcoholic. And through the generosity of a loving God, the miracle of AA, the 12 steps of this fellowship, and a wonderful sponsor, I had my last drink on July 26, 1981. And that truly is a miracle for me because I drank every day. I wasn't a falling down drunk. I didn't get drunk every day, but I did drink every day. But just to back up a little bit and give you some of my background, and I think hopefully I'll cover the topic because sponsorship is such a big part of my story. So anyway, here I go. My childhood, I think I learned early on when I was born, my mother died in childbirth. And my aunt took me to raise me with her four children for the first 7 years of my life. Of course, I thought they were my parents and these were my brothers and sisters. And, you know, she raised me with the same love and care that she gave her own, and I'm grateful for that. When I was seven, my father, who was an alcoholic, came and picked me up, and I went to live with him and my new stepmother. And my father was a raging wife beater, kind of an alcoholic. So that was, I guess that's where I learned about violence, and I learned about fear of rejection, and I learned about abandonment. And, you know, I have a lot of trouble sometimes today even. And it's hard, you know, when you come in here and these people just love you so much. They don't judge, they just love you. And I felt like I didn't really have that in many of my growing up years. I was lived with different people, finally adopted at 13. And I didn't really drink until I was, I guess, 21. I got married when I was 21. And the day of my wedding, my sister-in-law said to me, "Well, you know, if your husband wants to have a drink when he comes home from work, you make sure you sit down and have one with him." Or she said, "Or he'll be stopping off with the guys and going to the bars." And I thought that was probably wonderful advice. So I did just that. That's when I began, you know, my drinking career. I drank for 19 years. I don't know how long I drank alcoholically. I don't know when I crossed the line. Let's see. Anyway, I lived in New York when I first got married, and my husband received a job transplant up to New England in 1980. And, of course, by this time I was drinking, I thought socially. You know, and it didn't matter in New York with my drinking friends. If nobody could remember the night before, you know, it was just not a big deal. And between a bunch of us, we could piece it together if we had to. And, you know, it was something else. Okay, I moved to New England. Of course, now, you know, I'm in a strange place. I don't have any new friends. My kids are driving me crazy. It's the summer, 1980. Missed my drinking buddies. This is where I think I really, my drinking really went downhill. because I just, you know, that self-centered fear, oh, how am I going to make new friends? And I knew I needed to drink. And, you know, the United Parcel man would come to the door with a delivery, and he'd say to me, are you okay? Because my hand would be like that, and I couldn't. I said, well, I just had way so much coffee this morning that, you know, couldn't write. And I was blacking out, you know, and I knew something was really wrong with me. And how did I get to Alcoholics Anonymous? The grace of God, not my own good thinking, believe me, absolutely the grace of God. And when I got here, I heard your war stories, and I thought, oh, my God, I didn't do any of that. I wasn't an alcoholic to start with here because I hadn't drank in the morning. And I knew if you drank in the morning, you were an alcoholic. And I heard your stories, and I heard people say they drank around the clock. I didn't do that. You know, I was Mother of the Year. I thought I was Mrs. Brady. Always looked good on the outside. And the problem was my insides and my outsides didn't match at all. You know, I was torn apart. I had that hole in my soul that you hear them talk about. Anyway, I came in here, and I thought, well, yeah, it's nice that this program is here for you people. But, you know, I felt something that very first meeting, I think, that I didn't recognize it at the time, but it's something I feel every time I go to an AA meeting, and that's unconditional love. There's just so much of it in this room. But anyway, I listened to the stories, and I thought there was no way I could be an alcoholic. But the attraction was here. I sort of wanted what you had, but I didn't want to do what you did. So I'd bounce around, and I'd go when it was convenient, maybe once a week. And I can remember I got sober in New England. The first 15 years of my sobriety was in New England, and the last 14 had been down in Sarasota, Florida. So I'm grateful to have friends from New England, Florida, and all over the world here today, really. Anyway, I went to this meeting. I guess it was like a discussion meeting, and they went around the table, and they got to me, and I thought, oh, geez, what am I going to say? And I said, well, I'm Hazel, and I'm really visiting. And I kind of whispered it. And then I explained to them when they came my time to talk that I was not really an alcoholic, but I was just looking for a little bit of control over my drinking. And this gentleman who had 16 years said, sweetheart, if you're looking for control, you're out of control. And I hated this man. I absolutely hated him. You know, but as I look back, he changed my life. At that moment, forever, he really changed my life. I didn't know any social drinkers that try to count their drinks and watch the clock and do all those kinds of things, you know. And my social drinking friends didn't have shaky hands and blackouts, you know. They knew what they were doing. And they didn't have to get up in the morning and go through the garbage to see if there was a dog, empty dog food can, did I feed the dog? Count the plates in the dishwasher, did I feed the kids? You know, that's how I was living when I got here, and yet I was, you know, this wonderful wife and mother that didn't really have a problem with alcohol. Anyway, as I say, the generosity of a loving God just kind of took me by the hand, and I went to a meeting. I lived in Hanover, Massachusetts at the time, and I certainly was not going to go to a meeting in Hanover where people knew me. Never occurred to me they didn't know me because I just moved there. But I drove to Marshfield, you know, town away, got in there and got settled in my little seat, and two of my neighbors walk in the door. I was mortified. I was absolutely mortified. This gentleman and lady, this beautiful lady who today is, well, from day one has been my sponsor. When I decided I needed a sponsor, she's been my sponsor, and God bless her. She's, you know, raised me through my Wonder Bread years. It's just been amazing. Anyway, I thought, well, she must be here, you know, doing a study or a report or something. I just, you know, this was one of the most refined, dignified ladies I'd met in New England, you know. And as it turned out, she lived right behind my house. And anyway, as I say, I bounced around a bit, and I went to meetings when it was convenient. Didn't get a sponsor, didn't get a group, didn't need the steps. And I was dry for probably six months, and I picked up a drink. And I knew it brought me to my knees. I needed a sponsor. I needed the group. I needed the God. I needed it all, every bit of it, every bit of it. And this beautiful lady, you know, she was the first woman who gave me unconditional, probably the first person that I recognized as giving me unconditional love. I came to trust her. I hadn't trusted anybody probably ever in my life. And it was just amazing. You know, she loved me. She didn't criticize. She didn't judge. She didn't say, oh, my God, you did that. You know, there was none of that. It was just kindness and love, and I guess that's what I really needed. And when I asked her to be my sponsor, and she said she'd be delighted, she said, I'll pick you up tonight for a step meeting. And I said, well, okay. And I went, and she said, now this is what we do. We go to a step meeting. We have a home group, and we have a step group, and we never, ever miss those meetings unless we're at a wake and it's our own. And or I think later on she said, if you're at a Red Sox game. But anyway, I figured I got this sponsor, now I gotta listen to her. But I was like this. It was white knuckle sobriety, absolutely white knuckle sobriety. And she said to me one day, she said, you know, have you ever tried asking for help? And I said, well, no. She said, why don't you try it? What have you got to lose? I said, well, okay. I figured rather than lie to her, I'll do it. So I did. I got down on my knees that next morning, I guess, and asked this God, higher power, to help me stay away from the drink. And she said, and if you're successful, you get back down at night and you thank this whatever that kept you sober. So I was doing that, and you know, I don't know the minute, the hour, the day, or whatever. All of a sudden, my white knuckles were gone. I was happy. I was smiling. I was feeling good. I was on a pink cloud. I said to my sponsor, you know, I go through the supermarket, and I'm singing to the music. And I said, people are going to think I'm nuts. She said, no, that's happiness. It's how you're supposed to feel. And I didn't know that. Happiness is a byproduct of right living, and I learned about that from this woman in the 12 Steps of Recovery. And, you know, it's a blessing today. I have a sponsor. My sponsor has a sponsor, and I have some wonderful sponsees. And I try to raise them the same way that my sponsor raised me, and that's by going through the 12 Steps. I actually do some of the ladies like to be done, you know, go through them individually. They're a little embarrassed and shy yet, but that's, you know, I suggest the home group and the step group. And, you know, I did what she did, and that's what I hope that they do with me. They see me doing the steps and going to step meetings, and it's not like you do this, you know, practice what you preach. And I've never had a problem with that because my life, I thought my life was over when I got here. And, you know, I just realized it just began. It's been the best years of my entire life. When I was, I guess, 8 years sober, things were great. 1988, things were great. And my world kind of collapsed on me. I had three beautiful children, and I think my drinking, my alcoholic drinking, really began when my second son was born. He was premature, and they didn't think he'd live through the night, and I think that's when I went over the edge. But anyway, I'm happy to say that this young man did make it through the night, and he grew up and be a handsome young man, and we had a wonderful relationship. Anyway, as I say, in 1988, in September, my husband lost his job, and I thought, oh, my God, my daughter's in college. There goes the mortgage. I mean, I was just beside myself. And I didn't have to drink. You know, the people in AA wrapped me in a blanket of love. They just extended their hearts and their hands. I couldn't believe it. And a month later, October 1st, this beautiful, handsome little baby that was now 22 years old was killed in a motorcycle accident. And he was a missing person for 10 days before they found him. And I think that's the worst. Anyway, again, you know, God's grace and the gift of this fellowship and the people, they carried me. They carried me in a blanket of love. I would never have made it by myself. And, you know, the miracle, I didn't have to drink through that. And, you know, I was drinking all the time. I was not all the time, but every day. And I thought, you know, I drink if the Red Sox win. I drink if the Red Sox lose. And I drink if they don't play. And so for me to have things like this happen and not have to drink, I couldn't believe it. I just couldn't believe it. To this day, I pinch myself sometimes and say, wow, you know, thank you, God, and thank you, people. Anyway, 3 months after that, after my son's death, my first husband was diagnosed with terminal cancer. And we went through a year of chemo and radiation and all that. And, you know, it was my group, my home group members, that would come and take him to chemo into Boston, Mass General, you know, day after day after day, and look after me, look after my house. I mean, it was just like, it was unbelievable. I can't even describe it. And that's what people in here do, even if they don't know you. They extend their heart and their hand. I finished that little story. He died 18 months later, and he's buried next to my son. And I'm grateful that I didn't have to drink over either of those deaths, that I had them in my life the way I did, and that I had the relationship with them that I did. And I wouldn't have had that without a group and a sponsor and a God and the steps. I just wouldn't have had that. And today I try to explain to my sponsees, you know, we have 12 steps, and we're going to do them all. There are not 13. There are 12. And I talked about relationships. And then I heard somebody say, well, yeah, you know, the 13th step is kind of a combination of the first and the 12th. It's, my life is unmanageable, and I'd like to share it with you. And anyway, okay. Anyway, I have to start winding down here, but I can't say enough for this fellowship and the people that make it up and the God that, you know, is present everywhere. Since I came in here and started doing what you people do, listening to a sponsor in my group and doing the steps, the will of God's never taken me where the love and the grace of God hasn't sustained me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hazel. It's amazing, you know, when we hear somebody share, and it doesn't matter. I guess I speak for myself as a woman, alcoholic. Doesn't matter if you were in Massachusetts or in Florida or come from North Dakota or whatever. We always have about the same path. I, too, was going to be the mother of the Brady Bunch. I had a bunch of kids. I could have been the mother, but the mother was missing. So my Brady Bunch never turned out either the way I wanted to. And my sponsor tells me that I need to be at my home group meeting every week, too, unless the Colts are playing. No, she doesn't. I looked right at her, and she's shaking her head. It's an honesty program, so I have to be honest here. Now I'd like to hear from Matt, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic. I have to tell you, I get extremely nervous doing this, so I've been sober with the grace and the patient understanding of a very loving God for almost 7.5 years. I understand exactly what Hazel was saying about the Red Sox. I would have had a real tough decision today if it was a day game. I just don't know. My home group is the Branch Union Group, which is in Branch, Massachusetts. That's the service location for that group is District 8, Area 30, which is the General Service Committee of Eastern Massachusetts. And it is my pleasure to serve them as area registrar. God, I'm really nervous. I came by to look at the room yesterday. I almost had a heart attack. I grew up in a little neighborhood right at the tip of Boston Harbor called South Boston. South Boston is the Irish center of Boston. It's where Boston has their St. Patrick's Day parade. It's where it's said there's a church, a liquor store, and a Catholic church, a bar on every street corner. And that's not far from the truth. It was a wonderful place to grow up as an alcoholic. You know, I grew up across from the Patrick F. Gavitt Middle School, and I spent my first 12 years there, in that schoolyard, playing stickball and halfball and football and touch football and street hockey. That was my life. I loved it. And we had a crowd of kids that were just great. And it was there at the age of 13 years old that I decided that we had this gentleman who had some mental health issues hanging around with us, playing with us. And I decided that I could kind of work him and manipulate him into buying me just a six-pack. That's all I wanted to try. I wanted to be like the older kids. I wanted to try to be like my dad. And I conned him into doing that. And I had that six-pack. And what happens to most of the alcoholics when they drink for the first time or very early on the drinking is that glow just came over me. And I knew I was gone. But For me, the day that was really important was the very next day. Because the very next day, I became a daily drinker. And things started to happen real fast. By the time I was 20 years old, I was heading to my first detox rehabilitation, a lovely little place down in Newport, Rhode Island, called Edge Hill Newport, that was there at the time. It was one of these luxury rehabilitation centers that they had around in the 70s. And, you know, it was a volleyball court, four-star meals. It was just, we had a duck, two geese that came to the back door. We had to name them, so we named them Gin and Tonic. And I knew that if I spent 30 days there, that I was going to come out with a really good tan. But I got there, and I heard there was one guy that came into that meeting, and he talked about something really unique. And he caught my attention. He talked about what happened to him when he had the first drink of alcohol. But he didn't have the second one. And that feeling, I knew. He talked about if he had that drink and he didn't have the second one, his blood pressure would start to rise, his hands would start to sweat, his heart would just be racing. He hated everybody, and he didn't know anything else to do except getting that second drink. And I knew that feeling. And I left that place with one thing that I knew, I knew I was an alcoholic. And they sent me back to South Boston with an aftercare program that was pretty strong. And in those days, the recovery in South Boston was unbelievably strong. It was in the 70s, and these guys had 25 years, 30 years. These guys were iron workers and pipe fitters. They were in the trades. These guys lived hard, they worked hard, and they did recovery hard. And I walked in with my hair in a ponytail, pimples, a Camel cigarette hanging out of my mouth, a Barracuda jacket turned inside out, and these guys just looked at me and said, "Sit down, kid, you have nothing to offer us." And I had my first AA resentment. That resentment brought me back out for 27 years. I didn't come back. And what happened to me is, at the end of my drinking, they were changing body parts. And I just, what happened is probably what happened to half of you here. I just got sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I was living in Quincy at the time that I had taken custody of my youngest daughter, and I used to drive back and forth up Hancock Street because I had to get back to Southie a lot. And every Thursday night I would drive by, and if you've been in an AA meeting once, you just know what an AA meeting looks like. The people out there hanging around with cigarette butts and coffee cups. And so I knew where to go when I needed help. And I got to that meeting, and they had a little tradition at the beginning of the meeting where they asked people if they would be willing to raise their hand to be temporary sponsors. And this gentleman raised his hand, and then I just went up and I said, "Hi, my name is Matt, and I'm an alcoholic." And I need help. And that was all I had to do. That was it. 27 years. That sponsor was really great. He was my first sponsor, and he was tough. Because I came in here still kind of cocky and arrogant. I knew everything, and I heard a friend of mine saying this morning, her sponsor told her, "You may know all the answers, but you don't know the questions." I knew the questions. And he just sat me down. He was one of these sponsors that just drilled me to get that thinking out of my head. We were at a meeting one night, at a meeting on a Saturday night, and I was sitting next to him, and there was this gentleman at the podium, and he was just had the whole audience laughing. He was telling joke after joke after joke. Everybody was getting into it except for me. I had my hands, and I was just looking at him, trying to figure out how he was so happy, how he was doing all this. And, my sponsor just looked at me, and he gave me an elbow, and he said, "Don't think." Just listen. And that was the kind of sponsor he was. He didn't take anything from me, and he helped me get through those first 6 months. It was very early in sobriety when he introduced me to a gentleman named Ray. Ray is the kind of guy that if you meet when you're only a couple weeks sober that you want absolutely no part of. He was happy. He was smiling. He had a little giddy in his step. You know, he had a big book under his arms, and he just looked at me and he said, "How you feeling? You found God yet? Have you read the book?" I was only 3 weeks sober, and I really didn't know a heck of a lot. But I knew one thing. I knew I had to get rid of Ray. So I said, "Ray, listen, you don't understand. The only way I'm going to learn something is if it's in an algebraic equation, a mathematical formula. A plus B has to equal C. That's the only way I can learn. So your book's not going to do me any good. You're not going to do me any good." And Ray just looked at me and he was astounded. And he just walked away. And I sat down. And I kind of knew that I had hurt his feelings. But he was gone and I was happy. The next week I came back to that meeting, and as you walk into the hall of that meeting, if you come in and you turn left, that's where the core members all sat, and I came in and I went and I took a left, and out of the corner of my eye I saw Ray, and he came running across the room. And he didn't get within 5 feet of me when he started to yell, "High expectations equals low serenity." I said, "What?" He said, "High expectations equals low serenity." I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "The level of serenity is directly proportional to the level of acceptance." I said, "Are you out of your mind?" He said, "No." He said, "They're formulas and they're equations and they're in this book. Why don't you read it?" Now, I sat down at that meeting, and I still really didn't want a heck of a lot to do with Ray, but I couldn't help being impressed with the fact that this guy, who I intentionally insulted the week before, had taken a week to figure out how to get me to read the book, and I was impressed. Ray and I became friends after that, and I had some struggles in my first 6 months. I was struggling to find a higher power. That was the thing that I knew I was going to need someday. But I was going through a lot of stuff, and I began to call him all the time. Even though he wasn't my sponsor, I called him all the time. And every time I'd call him, I knew that I needed to have my big book ready, because I would call him and say, "Ray, I'm getting divorced." He'd say, "You have your big book?" And I'd say, "No." He said, "Get it." Now, every time I called him, the answer was in the book for anything. And I really was starting to struggle around 6 months. I had taken custody of my youngest daughter, and we were having some issues together, living together by ourselves, and we were driving each other crazy. And I was ready to drink. And we had gone on a commitment with that group. I know a lot of you don't know what commitments are, but it's when groups go out and visit other groups, and we went on a commitment with that group, and it was a Sunday morning in Dorchester, if any of you been to Dorchester. I had met a few people from Dorchester here this weekend. But it was rainy, nasty day, worse than we had this whole week. It was just cold and damp. It was a Sunday morning meeting. It was 9 o'clock. It was in a stone-cold church basement. And at the break of that meeting, I grabbed Ray and I said, "Ray, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm ready to drink. It's just driving me crazy. She's driving me crazy. I don't know what to do." And Ray said, "Well, have you tried praying?" I said, "Yeah, Ray, I've been praying. You know that. I've been trying to do it. It's just not working." Ray said, "Well, sometimes you have to do something a little bit more." And I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Sometimes you have to look for miracles." And I said, "How do you do that?" He said, "You see that gentleman over there?" And Ray pointed to a gentleman sitting all by himself in the corner in a wheelchair. And this guy was old. He was ragged. He had a sweater around him. He was freezing. He was damp and cold. His hands were shivering. And Ray just looked at me and he said, "That guy came in here 15 minutes before the meeting started, all by himself in a wheelchair, soaking wet. He's got a bad back because he's got a pillow propping himself up. He's an alcoholic, and he's doing all that just to stay sober." He said, "That's a miracle." He said, "Not only that, he's keeping me sober because I'm watching him." I lost track of Ray after that, but things changed for me after that. I came to meetings, and I started to see things that I had never seen before. I came and I started to hear things that I never heard before. The exact same things that had been going on for 6 months. And I began to collect things that started to make sense to me. And I began on my path to finding a higher power. But it still took me a while. It took me almost another 2 years. And then just one day, it just happened. It just made sense all day. I can't explain it really well. It just made sense. Sometimes I still have trouble describing who and what my higher power is. But I do know this. I know what it means to have one. I know what it means, that it means the type of person that I have to be, that I have to try to be. I know what it means to how I'm going to treat everybody else. And I mean, I'm not perfect at this at all. I mean, I am intensely human. But things have just been absolutely since that day. I knew I had to change my home groups. That home group was really good. They were really active and they did a lot of stuff, but there weren't really a lot of people that were doing a lot of work there. And so I needed to find another room, another home group, and I eventually found myself at Braintree Union. And I needed to find a new sponsor. And there was only one guy that was going to fit that, and that was right. I got in touch with Ray. We found each other, and I asked him to be my sponsor, and he said, yeah. And for the next 2.5 years, we sat at his kitchen table every Sunday morning from 9 to 11 and read the book. I had dated the book when I started, and we had been working about 1.5 years. We had just gotten to page 64. And Ray said, what's the rush? It was taking us longer to read the book than it took the founders to write it. I have had some amazing teachers. My first sponsor was great. Ray was great. And I've had some amazing teachers. My first sponsor gave me a gift that was unbelievable. The first day I met him, he said, listen, I'm only one guy. If you need help and you see something you want, go ask people about it. And that's how I did. And I had some great people tell me things. There was a gentleman in my first home group, you know. These people gave me courage. They gave me strength. They gave me trust. Ray taught me to trust. But the greatest gift that they all gave me was their faith. And it's that faith that I hold on to now. Whenever anything happens, it's something I can call up anytime I need it. Anytime things are starting to happen, I can call it up, and it just fits. And it just gets everything going back together. There was a gentleman in that first home group who said something that just remarkable about his faith that I've held on to for a very long time. He said his faith had taught him that in the end, everything would be okay. And if it's not okay, then it's just probably not the end. But it is for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt. Matt mentioned he was told, don't think. I remember when I was meeting with my sponsor one time, and I was kind of looking at all of the little models we have, Easy Does It and all of those, and I happened to hit on think, 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 and I says, well, what does that mean? And she says, for you, nothing. She said, I will do your thinking for you. And I had a resentment. I, too, you know, you talked about questions, and I had some questions, but I certainly wasn't going to ask because I thought if I asked, it would show how stupid I was. And so I walked around for a long time without any answers because I didn't want to ask the questions. So if you have questions, that's why we have sponsors, because we've all been there and done that. So our next presenter is going to be Patrick from Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. I'm Patrick. I'm an alcoholic. I liked it better from over there. Right before this, I was volunteering downstairs, and that was the perfect thing to do before I came to do this, because I was not up here. But I apologize for anybody that I sent to the wrong room, down the wrong hall, doing something that you ended up somewhere you didn't want to go. So I apologize for that. Don't hold it against me. But if you get a chance to do that over the next couple days, do it. It's a really great experience. So this topic, sponsorship, leading by example. I want to say first my sobriety date. It's one of the things we do down here, down south. I was born into sobriety June 8th, 1992. And I was raised by the fellowship in Houston for the last 18 years. And I couldn't be more grateful. And I have a lot of people here who are supporting me, who are going to, you know, hit me afterward if I didn't do a good job. And but they love me, and I know they do. And I'm really, really happy to see my friends and the fellowship in Houston here supporting me. So I wanted to read a couple things that won't take long. I was looking in the Grapevine. I just got it. The AA's 75th anniversary edition just came out. And so I was perusing through the front stories, and there was some statistics in there about sponsorship. And one of them was that 79% of our fellowship have a sponsor. That's a pretty high percentage, which is great. So sponsorship works, right? And then 73% got a sponsor within 90 days. So, and sponsorship to me, you know, it's really kind of our unwritten tradition. It's our unwritten step, and it's our lifeblood. I mean, it's the way that we pass it on. It's the way that it was passed on to me. And so I was looking in the conference-approved pamphlet, questions and answers on sponsorship. And no, I don't work for GSO. But I do love the literature that we have. And that pamphlet starts out like this. It says, Alcoholics Anonymous began with sponsorship. It says, when Bill W., only a few months sober, was stricken with a powerful urge to drink, this thought came to him. You need another alcoholic to talk to. You need another alcoholic just as much as he needs you. And I thought that was really appropriate for right, you know, what we're here to talk about. But the way that pamphlet is structured, it talks about sponsorship in three different levels. It talks about the group and how the group is focused on sponsorship, and it talks about, you know, having a sponsor, questions like that, and it talks about being a, you know, being a sponsor, questions and answers on that. So I'm going to share some personal experiences about those three things from the groups I've been in and having a sponsor and et cetera. So at the group level, well, first let me tell you a little bit about my own story and just to let you know that I am an alcoholic. I drank for 10 years. I started drinking when I was 17, and I got sober when I was 27. So I was going down fast. I accelerated with some outside issues, but alcohol was always the primary thing that that I had to have. And I hated alcohol for turning on me because it left me without a solution. And that was a very scary place to be, without a solution. And I didn't know anybody in AA. I didn't know sober people before I got here. They weren't the people I was hanging out with. There was this, but my life had gotten really small when in my last months and years of drinking, small to the point where it was like I would only go to one restaurant, you know, because I knew I could drink there, like I wanted to drink, and I, you know, I just knew the drill. It wasn't like I had to step outside my comfort zone. So God had to come and meet me at that restaurant, and meet me at the places where I was, which was, you know, dark nightclubs at, you know, 2 and 3 and 5 in the morning. But at this one particular restaurant, it was a sunny afternoon, and it was a huge round table of people. The pitchers of margaritas were flowing, and I was sitting on one side of the table, and directly across from me was this person who wasn't drinking. And so I was like, who is that? And I don't want to know him. And why is he not drinking? I don't get it. And his name was Sean. And I had never met him before. And it was about a month later that through a series of phone calls and hitting a bottom that Sean was the person who I went to my first AA meeting with. You know? God makes those things happen. There's just no way that it could be any other way. So, I was really glad that Sean walked into my life. And so Sean took me to the meeting called On the Road Group in Houston, which is no longer there, but it's the meeting that I picked up my desire chip. And that group found sponsorship to be very important. In their agenda, in their format, their whole thing was, you know, not just we have a list of temporary sponsors or raising your hand. They were like, we suggest you get a sponsor. Do you have one? You know, get one now. It was just very direct, and at least that's the way I heard it. And I just, like, turned to Sean. I was like, will you be my sponsor? And he said yes. And so, I mean, I had a sponsor at my first AA meeting, and I had no idea what that meant. You know? I really just wanted to walk into AA and kind of slip in the back, fit in, say the prayers, you know, got to go home and memorize the Serenity Prayer. Got to make sure, you know, I just had to have it because I didn't want y'all to notice that I wasn't, you know, I didn't have it all together. I wanted to, like, come in sobriety having it all together. That was that was the way I was. Still don't have it all together. Kind of fell apart when I got here. But they, you know, I really appreciated that. And I remember my first meeting. I remember Milton leading it. I remember him talking about his Cadillac, you know, flying off the freeway and trash bags with bottles wrapped in paper towels so they wouldn't clink. I remember. And I remember this guy, John. And John gave me the pamphlet on with the questions. And I remember going home that night and reading that pamphlet and answering them all, you know, and knowing that this is where I was supposed to be, and that I needed to go back. And Sean took me to a different meeting every day for 7 days. And so I just thought you went here on Tuesday and there on Saturday, and, you know, I didn't know, you know. And then I was desperate, and I really wanted to be picked up and kind of dropped into new life without having to do any work. But, you know, walking into a meeting every day certainly changes your life. And it certainly went from drinking, going to a meeting, not drinking. You know, that's how it was for me. And I'm really grateful for that I haven't had to go back out. And I think I had, for me, enough pain in my drunkenness to hopefully not have to go back and do that again. Another group that I go to, just some other ways that groups share about and make sponsorship important to them or in their group agenda is like the temporary sponsor list, and we announce it at the 3 o'clock group. Our Tuesday night step study has we do the new membership packets, you know, and we make sure that people have phone numbers and we make sure that connection is there. So even though each group has a slightly different approach to how they do it, we really want to make sure that people know the importance of sponsorship and the importance of reaching out and not, you know, just kind of let somebody come in and let them walk out and not know why they're there, you know, not know why they came to us that night. So choosing a sponsor, obviously you heard how I picked Sean, so there was not a whole big guess there. It wasn't about, you know, Sean has what I want and all that good stuff. So when I first got sober, my first sponsors in my first years, my rule was you pretty much were allowed to share one truth with me, and then your turn was done. So if you were going to tell me that I was self-centered, then I was moving on. If you were going to tell me how dishonest I was, then I'm going to the next one. I could not handle any kind. I mean, I was not a person who could handle any self-criticism to begin with. I had no ability to see myself for my faults or anything like that. So when people started to point out the things that I kind of knew were there, I mean, it was just no way. I did not want to deal with it. But self-centeredness was kind of the big one. Every sponsor was telling me this same thing. So by the third sponsor, I was like, well, it might be true. I was kind of, it could be true. There was one sponsor I had who slammed her brakes, pulled off the side of the road, and screamed at me how self-centered I was. So I think that one kind of got through to me. Just a little bit. Poor Allison. So, you know, when Sean, one of the things that Sean did for me, which I think was really important for me, was that first Saturday that came around. You know, Saturdays were a day to party. And I had no idea what I was going to do on, you know, for a whole 24 hours on a Saturday. And I remember calling Sean up and telling him that. And he was like, well, come, you know, just come go hang out with me. And I remember telling him, just like, I have no idea how to hang out with you. I have no idea what we would talk about or what am I supposed to say. You know, I just was so, and I remember just being so upset about it. And because I really was lost with that. But he just said, come on anyway. And I was uncomfortable as hell, but it didn't matter. And we just hung out, and I stayed sober. So, I mean, that was something that was really important to me. It wasn't, you know, necessarily a step. It wasn't, you know, but it was him. He gave of himself, and those were things that were really important to me. And another one was a couple. I remember when I first got sober, I didn't have a car because I had wrecked every car I ever had. And that I remember I was on at a bus stop after a meeting, and this couple that I had seen in a meeting, you know, stopped their car, pulled over, let me get in, and drove me home. And I just remember that ride with that couple. And so it's important to me now, you know, if anybody ever needs a ride, you know, give somebody a ride. And that was a lesson that I learned from there. But then I started to hear about this, you know, look for sponsors that have something that you want. So I was like, okay, a Mazda Miata, you know. Yeah, I was looking for those kind of things. But I started to hear Larry, this guy, sharing in a meeting, and he was talking about this relationship. And he was talking about his personal relationship with the God of his understanding. And I was going, how does that work? I wanted something that he had. I didn't really know what it was. And I remember liking what he shared, you know, hearing what he shared. He was pretty strict. He was pretty, you know, confrontational, very honest, like normal people. And but I was scared of that, obviously. And but I remember asking him to be my sponsor, and because I felt like I had done everything possible to make God angry, and there was no way that I was going to be able to have a personal relationship with him. But he taught me how to have one, you know. He let me borrow his. He took me to places that he went, churches that he went, different things that he did, that ultimately, you know, I found my own way, but he was the one who helped me do that, which was great. And he was the relationship that really made me stop running in sobriety and learn the importance about showing up on a regularly scheduled time to meet with him, regularly, you know, call him on the phone, you know, like you were saying, go to set meetings, do things like on this normal basis. So, he was a huge influence on my sobriety and a sponsor of mine for a very long time. So being a sponsor, you know, you get all these great things, you learn all these great things, people are teaching you all these great lessons, and then I go, well, I'm going to do it my way. I'm going to sponsor people not like Larry, you know, because that's Larry's way. And so my initial sponsees, poor guys, I had the do as I say or else, you know, attitude. You know how far that goes with alcoholics. And then I'm a recovering people pleaser too, so I had to try the method of wanting to be liked by sponsees. You know, that wasn't a good approach either. Pushover. I wasn't being honest with them because I wanted them to like me. And then I would directly try and solve their unmanageable life problems. You know, I had the answers for you. Loss of job, bring it on. You know, jail, bad relationships. You know, I had all the answers. Somehow it wasn't working so well. So, you know, I finally got to the point where it was like, okay, how did I get sponsored? How did I get sponsors? Was what I had to, you know, get to, which required pain and a lot of not good experiences in trying to sponsor people. So today, the way that I do it, the way that I try and do it, obviously, it's God's involved. I can only share my experience if I have it. you know, if I've got direct experience that can help you, I'm all about sharing it. And my life is an open book, you know. I've done enough fourth and fifth steps where it does not matter, you know, what you know about me. I will tell it if it's going to help you. And but all I can do is share my experience and show you how I've done it through having a sponsor, through working the steps, through going to meetings, through being in the fellowship. So leading by example is, for me, is not asking sponsees to do something I've never done, you know. have to be willing to do, what they're doing when they're working their program. And showing them that I face life challenges, that I am in fear, that I am in lack of control, that I am resentful a lot of the time, and that I turn to my sponsor in the steps and meetings and do all of that as well. So I let them know that I'm human. And right now I'm currently blessed with 3 sponsees, and I got them in the last year and a half. And, you know, it's like Mondays, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. And God really wanted me to be prepared for this workshop, I think. And, you know, I look back at the people who have taught me, and they've taught me well, and I highly respect them. Okay. All right. Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to share. I mean, it's been a blessing and something I won't forget. Thank you.
Thank you, Patrick. I remember when my sobriety date is March 16th of 1977. And when I first sobered up, I was so smart I didn't need a sponsor. I didn't need someone to tell me what to do. And believe me, that's very painful, very painful. I remember sitting across the table from my sponsor when I would meet her every week, and she would say, I would just totally, totally tear napkins apart underneath because I was so afraid. And she would say, how are things going? And I would say, fine. And she'd say, oh, are they going fine? And she would start talking program, or she would start asking me some questions about something. And I would start to cry. And I would cry and cry and cry. And she would say, things are going fine, aren't they? And I said, they were until you start talking to me. But she just told me I had things buried so deep that I didn't know how bad I really was, and it took a long time. She said many times, but she told me this after I was a little bit better. She said, you know, lights were on, but nobody was home for a long time. So, you know, thank God for sponsors that stay with us and see something in us, that they know that there's something there, you know, and they keep showing up and waiting for us to get better. I remember one time she said, I kept complaining about the same things over and over and over again. And one day she said, well, are they working? And I said, no. She says, well, why are you doing them? And I said, well, I don't know. Is there another way to do something? And she said, yes, do you want to try something else? And, you know, I didn't know. You know, the insanity we have doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And I kept doing the same thing until she said that, told me there was another way. So I would go home and I would try it my way one more time. And when it didn't work, I had to finally give in and say, okay. But I hated to go back and tell her it worked. It worked. So it does work. We're going to open it up to the floor now for anyone that wants to share a little bit. There will be a limit of 3 minutes per person. So we have less than a half hour. So anyone that would like to just share about their sponsorship? Yes.
Hi, I'm Jean, and I'm an alcoholic. And when I was drunk, I never ran that fast to get up to a microphone. But when you stay, my sobriety date is June 10th, 1997. And I was in that 73%. In my first 90 days, I got my first sponsor. So I thank you for those statistics. And thank you for Sarah I for taking me through the steps right away, got me a 12 and 12. And I've never not had a sponsor. The sponsor I have now has almost 40 years of sobriety. I've had 5 sponsors in my 13 years of sobriety, and all of them I've had at certain times in my sobriety that God brought them into my life to help me with that part of my sobriety, and then we outgrew each other. One of us went one. I needed more spiritual. I needed more of a spiritual basis in the sponsor, and the one I have now is someone I've had for 10 years. And I went through 3 before her. That's what this program's about. And the message is not in our heads. The message is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's where I go for all my answers. And the God I found by working with a sponsor was also the God I have now, which is my first sponsor talk about unconditional love, unconditional love. I needed to have that kind of a God. And I found that through the love and trust I have in my sponsor, and how I give love and trust to my sponsees is to act loving and trustworthy. I act those things. And that's how I've attracted sponsees. I don't just talk the talk. I just am so aware of, I was so observant when I got into AA. I watched and observed and how other people treated other people. I looked for a woman that was kind and loving and tolerant. All my sponsors were kind, loving, and tolerant and accepting. And then I got to a point, I just like to see if people treat people kind, that's the kind of people I want to be around. Kind and loving, because love and service and kindness and tolerance. And if you surround yourself with women or men like that, you will find happiness, joyfulness, and freedom. And thank you.
Hi, my name is Joseph Dancy, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Yeah, 3 minutes is perfect. Anything more than 3 minutes, it's all about me anyway. I have so many words and so few thoughts. Sponsorship is really dear to me. Come to a lot of understandings in the 13 years, January 10th, 1997, for which I'm truly grateful. How I find a sponsor, and I got this from an Al-Anon at a Lakewood conference. I go up to the new man as soon as he walks in after the meeting, he gets his beginner's chip, and I go up to him, I introduce myself and ask him, have you had enough? Is that yes or no? Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Yes or no? If I get the two affirmatives, I carry around when I'm looking for sponsees, Clancy's 7 questions. Some of you might be familiar with that. I give them, it's a mini fourth step. I hand them the 7 questions and said, okay, there's certain things you have to do. You can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I need you to do is answer these 7 questions, and I need them back tomorrow. If I get them back tomorrow, we're into action. He's writing, and we get down to what's really necessary for him to get sober right away. Your first meeting should not leave without a temporary sponsor. All sponsorship is temporary. It's either temporary for a day, temporary for a lifetime, or temporary in between. Let's get started. Do not let them languish in the meetings. I came into the meetings, I languished. I was beat up when I came in. My wife was unmanageable. I came in, finally the divorce came down, I was beaten into a state of reasonableness. Had a lot of pain. That pain got me into the rooms. And then I got into the rooms, I'm talking in the rooms, I'm accepted by my group of peers. Hey, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm not getting any DWIs. I'm not getting kicked out. The old lady's not divorcing me. You know, I feel good. I got that pink cloud coming in. My sponsor goes, when are you going to work the fourth step? Yeah, I'm staying sober. Is that not enough? No, it's not enough. But I did that for many, many years. The meetings kept me sober, but I wasn't working the steps. So if the meetings are keeping, you sober, you might be sober, but you're not in recovery. I'll end with this. If you're new here, what we share is our experience, strength, and hope. Experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's what keeps us sober and how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift to carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. And the next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol. To clean house, as suggested in the big book and the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and to always trust in God. I'll close with this. That means I got a little while to go. I know. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Connell. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from Lenox, Massachusetts. And in 1997, I was 6 years sober. And what happened to me is a pretty common thing among us, which is I got a good life. And I started making decisions about my involvement in AA that weren't in my best interest. I was doing healthy things, and I thought that those were as important as my recovery. So I started missing meetings. I moved towns, and I changed sponsors. And at 6 years sober, I was pretty close to picking up a drink. And I went to an AA meeting, the one meeting a week that I was going to at that point, and I shared about how I almost drank that day. And afterwards, a guy that I knew named Bill came up to me, and he said, and he basically kind of, you know, took my inventory. And he said, how many meetings a week are you going to? That's not enough. Do you have a sponsor? And I said, yeah, I have a sponsor. He said, who's your sponsor? I said, my sponsor is Dave H. And he said, really? What's his phone number? And I didn't know. And this was 97 when you really needed to know the seven digits, you know? And that has become the essential of sponsorship for me now. I need to call my sponsor on a regular basis. Today I call my sponsor probably every day. Sometimes I'll miss a day, but almost every day. And it's also what I strongly suggest to my own sponsees. You gotta call me. And I say something else. I say, if you're not calling me, then I'm not your sponsor. Because I tell you, I had a sponsor in name only. In name only. And that did not work for me. I need to hear from them, and I need to call my own sponsor as well. Thank you.
We cannot take any more than what we have up here, so please.
Hi, my name's Aaron. I'm an alcoholic. I've been sober since October 22nd, 1993. My home group is the Summit Hill Group of Alcoholics Anonymous in St. Paul, Minnesota. The real miracle of this program is that man who just spoke, Connell M., who I've known since the fifth grade. And we got sober in different parts of the country and are able to share this convention together, and it's that's a miracle. But on sponsorship, I have the same sponsor today as I did when I came in to this program. This is a man who, on the night after I had what was to be my last drink, came over to my house and sat with me and read more about alcoholism to me. And started taking me to meetings. And he's a man who really exemplifies our code, love and tolerance. And he shares his stories with me and allows me to share mine with him. And he's just a tremendous example. He's here at this conference. He's not at this workshop today. A year and a half ago, he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And after, you know, 30 years sober, he's still as active and involved in AA as he was when we first started doing this together almost 17 years ago. And I just hope that, you know, if that is the past that I come to, or if things like that happen in my life, that I can be the kind of guy and the kind of show-up man that he is when I'm faced with those kinds of challenges. And I firmly believe that because of the grace of God and because of what I found in this fellowship, that we'll all be able to do that kind of thing. Thank you.
I'm Larry Warden. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 15th, 1986. Since that time, for the grace of God and sponsorship, I've not had to drink. I'll tell you about three sponsors of mine. First sponsor was Bill H. Bill had only worked three steps when I came into AA. At 2 years, he still had only worked three steps. But about a month after he started sponsoring me temporarily, as I heard a gentleman say, he recruited help and got George P. to help him co-sponsor me. George had been through the steps. He knew the book Alcoholics Anonymous, and he was taking me. I'd work the steps with George. Bill was retired. I worked midnights, and he would meet me every morning at 7 so that he could get my head turned back around straight and head me toward the house, because I was still full of anger and desperation. At about 2 years, both those guys quit coming to AA. Bill H. went to the church route. He's still sober. Every time I see him, he's happy as a lark. We haven't got a monopoly on this. I don't know what, I couldn't do it, but he's doing it. George went back to drinking. It took this disease 12 years to kill him. I 12-stepped him many times in those times. He showed me what to do, and he showed me the power of alcoholism at its worst. And then that was at 2 years. I got me a temporary sponsor named Arthur, but I wasn't using him. And after a while, and just about the time I picked up my third year chip, everything was going crazy with me. My butt was falling off. I cleaned that up because my other sponsor's here today. Lou R., which was my sponsor, started being my sponsor at 3 years. He's still my sponsor today, 23 years later. And he's sitting over here. Lou, stand up, please. It took me that long because I didn't like him at all. But every time he opened his mouth, he referenced the big book and he referenced the steps. And he still does today. He's our GSR of our home group, by the way, which is Hungry Spirits Group in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. If you're ever in, just look up the Rebos Clubhouse there, and you'll see us around, I guarantee you. I won't take up any more time, but thank you all very much.
Hi, I'm Arlene, alcoholic, a member of the New Well, New Hope group. I couldn't resist jumping up here because this is like the most important thing in my life in sobriety. Is my sponsorship. But I, like the previous speaker, I didn't like her. I really didn't like her. And I met her at my first meeting, and I went into a meeting, and there she was, the same sponsor that Hazel has, refined, beautiful, you know, looking like a lady, and she came over to me and asked me if I was having trouble with alcohol, and I said, no, I'm having trouble with my Italian mother-in-law, my husband travels too much, I got the kids, the neighbors don't talk, but I'm not having the trouble with alcohol. And she said, I'll pick you up tomorrow. And, you know, it was the grace of God. I really didn't like her. She'd call my home, and I'd tell my husband, don't answer that phone. She wants me to go out running around with men and tell them my story everywhere over the world. I said, you wouldn't believe it. But anyway, one night I sat in a meeting very much like this, and I heard a woman say, if you don't have a sponsor, give yourself the best gift you can. And before you leave tonight, get a sponsor, because if you don't, you may drink. So I turned to this woman that I didn't like, that got on my nerves, and I said, listen, will you be my sponsor until I can get a good one? So anyway, she said she'd be delighted. And, you know, that's when my journey began. I was very difficult to sponsor. I would call her, call me anytime. All right, I will, 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, out of spite, you know. And she'd be picking me up. And did I ever ask her if I could drive her? No. You know, it was her privilege to drive me. But anyway, this journey of having a sponsor, oh, my goodness. From a woman that I didn't like, didn't want her around, didn't want her picking me up, didn't want her telling me what to do, I've grown to love this woman. And she, like the previous speakers, you know, she had the answers. Whenever I asked a question, it wasn't her opinion. It wasn't her mother-in-law's opinion. It was the opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous, because every single answer to every single question can be answered in there. And she knew it. I love being a sponsor. It's just wonderful. I love my Megan and Carol, and I try to do it the way it was passed on to me. And I'd like to think I'm serious about it, serious about the program, but not serious about ourselves. But anyway, one more thing. I hear people say, oh, my group is my sponsor. Oh, I've got like 4 or 5 friends that I talk to. And no, 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 no. They say, if you have more than one sponsor, you don't have one.
Hi, my name is Lynn H., and I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is November 27th, 1989, and my home group is the 7 a.m. Attitude Adjustment in Laguna Beach, California. Thank you. We say, when you say our home group, we say right on. So I'm really glad to be here. And my sponsor is Bonnie L., and for me, sponsorship is it's a God deal. I think he picked her because I hear Bonnie when I don't hear anyone else. I just hear her. And so I see her a lot, and we're in a lot of meetings together, and I talk to her a lot. I talk to her about my thinking, and it works out real well. And I'm forever grateful for Bonnie. And I sponsor a lot of women because the books, because I don't want to get drunk. And the book says nothing else works like intensive work with other alcoholics. And so I work with a lot of women. And also, in some small way, it is to show my gratitude, to pay back what's been given to me. I don't think I'll ever be able to completely pay it back. But I think it's how I show gratitude and respect to Alcoholics Anonymous. And it is a lot of fun because I sponsor a lot of really young, beautiful women who are always in these crazy relationships. And I'm happily married to my husband here, Mike, who is also 28 years sober. And we have an alcoholic marriage that works real well. And the only reason we're still married is because of AA. But these women talk about, and I had a previous sponsor talk about the acronym for relationship, which means real ecstatic love affair turns into audacious nightmare, sobriety hangs in peril. And thank you. And I'll end with saying that I'm a native San Antonian. I was born and raised here. My father died last April, and I'm here to be with my mom and to be with you and to express my gratitude because you gave my father back a good daughter. So thanks for letting me share.
Hi, my name is Mauricio. I'm an alcoholic, and I'm from Mexico City. My sobriety date is October 3rd of 2008, and I just want to share something something really wonderful that happened to me. I was going to go to another talk, and I saw that my friend was my friend when I was drinking back when I was living in New York was trying to call me, and I was in the other meeting, and I said, you know, I think I need to go to the sponsorship meeting for some reason. And, you know, there's a half an hour difference because that meeting started at 1. This one will start at 1:30. So, you know, I have to go to the sponsorship meeting. I haven't really sponsored anyone yet. And I called him back, and he said, listen, you know, my wife just told me that if I don't get into rehab, she's going to divorce me. I'm doing 12 grams of cocaine a week. My life is out of control. I don't want to go to rehab. I'm not ready to go to rehab. I need your help, you know. And he's, you know, he's a person with a big ego. And the fact that he called me and he asked me for help, just gave me goosebumps. And, one thing that I learned from the speakers today is that if he does come, you know, he said, I'm going to go to Mexico. I'm living in Mexico now. I'm going to get a ticket to Mexico, and I need your help, and I want you to please, you know, help me get sober. And what I know is that I need to share my experience, and I need to just explain to him how I did the steps, and hopefully if he comes to Mexico, he'll get sober. And so, well, thank you.
Hi, my name is Jim, an alcoholic, and I'm from Arlington, Massachusetts. And I want to thank everybody for sharing on the table this afternoon. I really got a lot out of everything. My sobriety date is February 21st, 1991. And I had a lot of trouble my first few years of sobriety because I had untreated bipolar illness. And my very first sponsor, which I also got within my first 90 days, took me around to meetings, forced me to meet people, to not be isolated. He brought me around to several groups, and probably my very first step meetings. And he got me active, and I needed to do that. At the time I got sober, I was not working. I was unemployable, and I had been institutionalized. So I really had the time to sink into the program. And I went through a couple of sponsors, and they all taught me something that I needed to have in my life. And my current sponsor, his name is Bob, and when I was in the hospital, I was into more than one hospital in 1996, Bob brought Alcoholics Anonymous to me. He brought meetings to me in the hospital. I spent my 5th anniversary in the hospital, and he gave me my 5th medallion in the hospital. I mean, he's been my sponsor for 14 years, and I've never felt The love of the program is a lot of people have talked today. You know, Bob showed me it's okay to be who I was. It's okay to, you know, to have problems. I was staying sober, and that was the biggest thing. And, you know, I've never forgotten, you know, the love this man has shown me. And he keeps on giving. And that's what sponsorship is all about. It's giving, and, you know, we go to meetings together. If you don't have a sponsor, you're missing out. And it's great to be at this convention, and thank you.
Could we thank our speakers one more time, please? Staying where you are, could we please close this workshop with the Lord's Prayer, please? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever.